is the head coach of the home team in Super Bowl 55.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
What if I told you when you answered that phone that you and I would be having this conversation today and you're the NFC champion head coach getting set to coach Tom Brady in a home Super Bowl for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? You would have told me what?
What are you smoking, bro? Give me some.
Earlier on the show, Atlanta Falcons head coach Arthur Smith. Coming up, Academy Award winning actor Casey Affleck. Plus, co-host of Good Morning Football, Kyle Brandt. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Welcome, hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show here on Wednesday. I am your humble host, Rich Eisen. That's the mug you see here. It says the Rich Eisen Show. You can get it on a RichEisenStore.com if you want. I guess I should be branded more now that we saw McAfee. He's got his shirt on, and Aaron Rodgers has his shirt on. And
yeah, we need T-shirts.
We
hoodies,
do. We have them. We got them. I guess it should just be more self-promotional.
But I can't smoke cigars.
Definitely can't do that. No, that's what AJ Hawk does.
We were all ready for that.
And then if you have books behind you, you got to have like actual titles on the books and the spines as opposed to be completely blank.
I'd wear merch if we got that discount, but since that never came about.
Good to see you, TJ Jefferson.
Hey, I'm very happy to be here.
Over there. Casey Affleck, the Academy Award-winning actor, is going to join us in about 20 minutes' time. So much to talk about with him. Chris, you heard that he... all his lines in Good Will Hunting were ad-libbed?
That's what I've heard. I've heard that before.
He and Scott Kahn, by the way, together in those Oceans movies were just dynamite. I got to get a good Oceans story out of him. Obviously, you know, he's thrown out a first pitch at Fenway Park.
Oh,
hey.
I mean, I'd talk about nerve-wracking.
Talk about bucket list for me. That would be
he's thrown out a first
amazing.
Pitch there. I imagine he's got a couple cents on Brady. Do we use the drop? The Deflategate drop from his brother. It's been a Rich Eisen Show drop
from the beginning,
literally since like 2014.
Yeah. I talked to football players, pro football players, across the board. They think it's
that was Deflategate. That's how long ago. That was 2014.
I plead the fifth.
So there's lots.
Wow.
Does Casey talk to as many football players across the board?
I'm able to say it's
as Ben does.
And be able to say it's
I don't know what the best part about that quote is. Is it that he talks to the football players or that he used the phrase across
that's
the board?
That's from Simmons' HBO show. That's how long ago that dropped.
Right. I talked to football players, pro football players, across the board.
And remember, it seemed like Ben had thrown back a few.
Right. I think that Ben was a little.
Well, I mean, look, I think everyone, you know, it's good times, man.
Yeah.
Green Room does have booze
so,
in a couple weeks.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about with Casey other than his films. By the way, our friend, which is he, Jason Segel, and Dakota Johnson in a very intense film, and The World to Come as well, which is going to be available on May 2nd on digital and hit theaters in the middle of next month. Look at that. There's a double feature right there.
Oh, yeah.
For the Academy Award-winning actor. So that'll be a fun conversation coming up in the middle of this hour. And then Kyle Brandt's going to join us in the third hour. It's always fun when he joins us on the program. We haven't asked our poll question yet at Rich Eisen Show.
Yeah.
Chris Brockman, have at it. Let's unpack it, as we say.
So it's a football question, but it's born out of a pop culture anniversary.
Yes, sir.
1976, the premiere of Laverne and Shirley.
1976?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, I was seven. When
did you
happened.
Watch that show?
Of course I did. Yeah.
Happy Days and that Tuesdays.
Oh my God.
They were on the same day?
Yep, back to back.
And you know who was born out of these shows was Mork.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yes. Right, Mork and Mindy was a spinoff from Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley and all those shows. Mork and Mindy came from Robin Williams was born on these shows.
Laverne.
So I mean,
I was thinking they're a great TV duo. Laverne and Shirley.
Yes.
What's the best quarterback wide receiver duo in the NFL right now?
Okay.
Right now. Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams.
Good one.
Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill.
Okay.
Ooh, nice one.
Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf.
All right. Kelsey would be saying, what about me?
But not technically a wide receiver, but I hear
understood.
You.
Understood.
I get it.
Okay. Did you post this yet?
It's up at Rich Eisen Show.
Did you include the Laverne and Shirley hook for it?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
All right.
I mean, I could add a thread. I could add a thread.
I never thought you could use Penny Marshall as a as a hook on our program. And Cindy Williams, by the way.
Doing what I can.
You know, and because I am completely pop culture nuts, Cindy Williams, who played Shirley on this program, okay, she was in a Francis Ford Coppola movie that never gets enough credit called The Conversation with Gene Hackman and Harrison Ford, one of his first movies ever. And it's a dark movie. And when I saw Cindy Williams in it, I'm like, wow, that's Shirley. I didn't know she was anybody but Shirley ever.
John Cazale in this movie.
John Cazale. Let me tell you about John Cazale.
All he does is hit home runs.
Used to. I mean, he suffered an untimely demise. Yeah, John Cazale. Yeah, yeah. Five movies.
Yeah.
Five.
All hits.
Okay. Two Godfathers. The Conversation. Deer Hunter. Correct.
Correct.
And the fifth one is, which was his fifth one?
Dog Day Afternoon. We always forget.
All of them were Academy Award nominated. All of them. I think he was also, if not the love interest in real life, or husband of Meryl Streep, right?
They were married for a short time. By the way, and he is amazing, never got nominated for an Oscar for any of his performances.
No kidding.
Only got
Fredo.
Nominated.
Fredo.
He only was nominated for a Golden Globe in 76 for Dog Day Afternoon.
Which he was amazing in, too.
He was with Pacino in three of them, De Niro in two of them.
I mean, five for five.
So now, speaking of Deer Hunter and De Niro, I've been waiting to tell you this story for a while. So, you know, I've been trying to get my kids to watch Miracle.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get them to do that. But anytime it's like dad makes a suggestion, you're going to get used to this, Chris. Get used to it.
Yeah.
And it upsets me to my core. Mm-hmm. That I would ever be viewed, I'm now a 51-year-old man, it upsets me to my core, I would ever be viewed by my children as somebody who doesn't get it. Mm. Okay? Who's passe, whose suggestions for movies are out of touch. But that's the way, and I have not earned this reputation with any of my suggestions, ever. Okay? I don't feel that way. And again, I have the best dad ever sign here to back it up, all right? But that's the way it's viewed. So here I am saying, hey, there's a story about the Miracle on Ice, 1980. It's just over.
You need to get it fixed.
Done.
Yeah.
Finished.
Yeah.
Okay? And no, it's a great story. It's unbelievable. And I look at my oldest
it's
son.
It's true. It happened.
I look at my 12-year-old. I'm like, guess how old I was? When this happened, I was 11. I was right around your age. It was unbelievable. It's a story about our country as well, about patriotism, about our love of victory and winning and being a team and an underdog story and unbelievable.
I love it.
Let's get into it. Nope, can't have it. Won't do it. Eventually, finally, twisted their arm to see it. And for our 7-year-old daughter, it was a little bit too. It's over 2 hours, by the way. Miracle.
Really?
Yes. And then there are scenes about, you know, geopolitics and husband wife scenes and stuff like that. And
it's not just hockey.
Yeah. So I had to make it up to her the next day and
with
watched
what?
Trolls World Tour. Okay, like this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're bargaining.
In order to get to matriculate to Miracle, though, one. When I was initially rejected, we're all around there and you look around at all the titles on your screen that you're able to just pop up on your television set. It's like the old days of walking through the Blockbuster when you're looking at videos, right? It's like it takes an hour and you and your friend can't agree on anything. Yeah. And I hadn't had that feeling since walking around Blockbuster in high school. And it grates on me. I get very upset. Certainly when all they want to do is watch the same damn kid movies over and over again. So what it was finally settled on, after much recrimination and argument, was a movie called War on Grandpa from 2020. Don't look it up. I'll tell it to
okay,
you.
Okay.
Yeah, we want
to. War with Grandpa? Pardon me.
Is it a cartoon?
The War with Grandpa. Okay. And the grandpa played by Robert De Niro.
Oh.
And his friends, and he's a grandpa who has a senior moment. His longtime wife is gone, and his daughter, played by Uma Thurman, and her husband, played by our friend Rob Riggle, welcome him into their house.
Okay.
And the grandson loses his room to Grandpa. The son gets kicked upstairs to the attic.
Okay.
Grandpa's in his room.
I'm in.
And the grandson has a problem with Grandpa moving in and taking his room and starts sort of like a Home Alone type battle with Grandpa. You know, like putting cement in cookies and stuff like that. You know, like it gets a little dark sometimes, but.
Sounds fun.
Right. And so I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, I'm trying to get my children the exposure to great films as fast as possible, because I've always dreamt of, I can't wait to show my kids these movies, right? And I'm trying to do it with Miracle, couldn't get there, and I'm at the war with Grandpa. And it dawns on me in the middle of all this, this is the first De Niro movie my children are seeing.
It's a new actor. The old guy.
As the grandpa.
Yep.
And I just pause the movie, which is a provocative act with these children, to pause it. And I just say, nobody's ever seen a movie with this guy, Robert De Niro, right? No, Dad, no. And I'm like, do you all realize he's one of the greatest actors this country has ever had? And he doesn't ever do movies like this, certainly when I was growing up and being exposed to Robert De Niro. If I could say they could not give two craps about it, I am absolutely undercutting the number of craps they actually gave about it.
Did they say you're talking to me?
No, I wish.
Nice.
Dad, turn it back on. And I thought to myself, I am failing. I am failing these children. And then on top of it, who comes strolling in as guests, as co-stars? Christopher Walken, Cheech Marin,
of course,
Jane Seymour,
hey.
And I can't even turn up and say, wait till you see Live and Let Die. Oh, my God. All right? And I think to myself, will they be exposed to Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman with her before Live and Let Die? And I feel like saying I could just totally mess with them completely for a very long time, kill two birds with one stone with Walken and De Niro and show them Deer Hunter.
That's a lot. It's like a four-hour movie.
Out of all the De Niro movies, you know, that's as far away, like...
The complete opposite.
And I thought to myself, how do I work him into De Niro? Like, is Goodfellas the bridge?
The Fockers.
It certainly can't be.
Yeah, Meet the Parents.
I think Meet the Parents is the next way to kind of work him in.
Yeah.
And then what, Midnight Run?
Midnight Run would be a good one.
No, it's filthy.
Later. Terrible language.
Analyze.
Meet the Parents is definitely the bridge, the next bridge.
You could Ben Button it. You can just work backwards.
But I just thought to myself, have I failed them?
Well, here's the question.
30 years.
Did they enjoy the movie? Them?
Of course they did.
Okay, so then you didn't fail, because now they have this idea that they like this old guy, right? They like this De Niro, but as they get older, wait till they start. Their minds are going to be blown. Like, what?
Travis Bickle?
Travis Bickle.
Yeah, like,
oh, my God, that's the old guy. So
you definitely didn't fail. You planted the seed.
Yeah,
the
seed.
The guy from the Mohawk who tells the Secret Service agent he's from Fairlawn, New Jersey, before he's stalking the presidential candidate. Yeah, that's the grandpa from War with Grandpa.
And then once they get to Cape Fear. Then it's gonna,
just think the first
time. It's not necessary to lay a foul tongue on me.
Taylor
my
goes, "You talking to me, Dad?" I'm gonna be like, "You're gonna be so happy, all from that."
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't believe it. Like, so honestly, I've grown up thinking that's to myself, funny. "I'm gonna be a dad one day." You know, my dad was an excellent model, so I'm like, "I'm gonna be a dad one day." I cannot wait to watch these movies with my kids and expose them to all of this. And I'm trying to do it. Susie's desperate, too. She's like, I can't believe we can't think of stuff for our kids to watch that's really good, you know? And then we just devolve into this sort of stuff. And I couldn't believe it. The first De Niro movie
that's
my children have ever seen is The War with Grandpa.
I think you're fine, man.
almost 50 years.
Did they like Miracle?
Zan, but my two boys stuck it out, but it was long. It's long.
Yeah. It's 2 hours, 15 minutes.
It's long. And, yeah. I had to explain to them that Jim Craig was terrific, yeah. and Ruzioni, and tell them what it meant to us. And I teared up. I cry at the end of Miracle every time. And they look at me like, Dad, are you crying? I'm like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I was also crying at the end of the war with Grandpa, but for different reasons that you don't know about, that I'm now sharing with my audience.
Nice.
I've been, to using a good fella phrase, cultivating that caper. This happened like 2 weekends ago, you know, obviously. It just hasn't been.
We haven't had time.
Come on, man. Let's take a break.
Amazing.
Casey Affleck's going to be calling in about 5 minutes' time right here on The Rich Eisen Show. The Academy Award-winning Casey Affleck next on The Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100% you need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're back here on our radio network as well. Rich Eisen Show here on Peacock TV and Terrestrial Radio Network, and also our Sirius XM Channel 211 NBC Sports Audio every day. Thrilled to have here on the show for the first time. We're in year 7. It's been quite some time, and thrilled to have here the Academy Award winning actor. He won the trophy for his fantastic work in Manchester by the Sea. He's got two films to talk about right now. One, he's in both, Our Friend, which is available now in select theaters and on demand, as well as The World to Come, which he stars in and produces. That's available in the middle of February and then in early March on digital. He is Casey Affleck. How are you, sir?
Hello, Rich. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You bet. Appreciate you coming on here. Let's talk a little sports first. Let's dive in first. Are you, I imagine, big time Boston sports fan? Is that a fair assumption, sir?
That's a fair assumption. I grew up in Boston. I played sports my whole life. I still play sports. I loved them. I worked at Fenway. Sports have always been a big part of my life. So, Patriots, Celtics, Red Sox.
All right, so let's get into it. Working at Fenway, were you a vendor? Is that what you're saying?
I was a vendor, man. I started out, I was 13 years old, and I was playing on a baseball team with some older kids, and those kids played on a travel team with some coach who had a stand at Fenway. His dad owned like a vending business, and they just thought it would be funny, I think, to bring the younger kid along. You know, we would go and work, you know, after school. You show up at like 3 o'clock and you get ready and you work the whole crowd coming into the game and then the crowd leaving. So you're not home until 11 o'clock at night. I don't know, you know, my mom let me do this. Made pretty good money. I worked a lot of games through like eighth grade, freshman year in high school. And in the middle of the games, everyone would be on the inside. We were on the outside on Lansdowne Street. And we would go into the game. We, you know, we'd give like sausages and hot dogs to the kids, the other guys who were working the turnstiles, and they would let us in for free, and we'd go find seats. So I saw, I don't know, you know, 100 games at Fenway.
So basically what you're saying is a patron wanting to put down their hard-earned American dollars to see Mike Greenwell and Boggs and Marty Barrett and Spike Owen go at it could have bought a hot dog from Casey Affleck. Is that what you're saying?
I'm sure they did, yeah.
The John McNamara managed 1988 Red Sox, pretty much. I'm trying to do the math in my head right here.
Yeah,
so.
That was, those are the years of like Morgan Magic. We got okay. when he came in and we won 20 home games in a row or whatever. And there's a lot of Lee Smith. I remember we worked right in front of this bar called the Cask and Flagon.
Of course.
And after the games, you know, we'd still be cleaning up. The crowds have gone. Half the team would come out and go into the Cask and Flagon. And the dude I worked for who owned the thing, he would go in there too and have a few pops. And those are, that was back in the day. People were, rules were a little bit more relaxed. And I would go in there and just wait for my ride home, you know, and sitting around at the bar. And it's like Lee Smith is having a few. That was a fun time.
I imagine so. Man, oh, man, oh, man. So what's your feel watching Tom Brady do what he's doing with Gronk for another team right now, Casey?
I'm really happy for them. Happy for both of them. I love it. It's amazing. If you can't appreciate what Brady's doing now, you just don't love sports. I mean, it's just incredible. So I'm rooting for him and Gronk, too. And, I mean, I think that they're going to be wishing they had brought along Stephon Gilmore in the next game. It's going to be tough for them. But I've got faith.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, and I know you're a diehard, you said, Boston sports fan. I'm wondering if this voice rings a bell from back in the Deflategate era from about 6-7 years ago. Go for it, Mike.
I talked to football players, pro football players, across the board. They think it's
Does that voice ring a bell to you, Casey?
I recognize that hysterical rant, yeah.
Do you speak to football
players?
You're
still talking about Deflategate. Come on.
No, I'm just...
it go.
No, I'm just wondering if you speak to football players across the board as much as your brother does.
All the guys I talk to in the NFL.
That's our... We've been playing that soundbite drop for several years because I just love... He's just... He was into it, man, and that's the passion of the Boston sports fan, is, you know, is that you just back your guys, and that's it, end of story, you know.
That's right, and Tom and Gronk still feel like our guys. I don't begrudge them for moving on.
Of course,
you gotta go find new places to grow, and you need to grow. So I'm rooting for him.
And we noticed as well, Casey, that you have thrown out a first pitch at Fenway Park, and we've now established that you grew up in that building. What in the world was that like for you to do that?
That was incredible, man. I wish I had warmed up a little bit. I got a better arm than that,
okay.
But that was really an honor. Just bizarre.
Are you saying you didn't throw a strike? What happened? What happened?
I don't think I threw a strike. I didn't get the. It was. It was in the dirt.
Look, but here's the thing. It's good that I don't know the answer to it, Casey, because if you had done something horribly wrong, that lives on YouTube for absolutely ever. So the fact that I don't know whether you threw a strike means that you were serviceable enough. I did one once in Dodger Stadium, and the thing that you don't know is that you have to throw the ball up in the air. You feel like when you're on the mound, because I'm assuming you did do it from the mound, right? Because you're real deal. So you're not going to do it. You're not going to just stand in front of the mound and throw it. You're going to do it from the rubber, and the whole thing is that if you throw it down, that's when you dirt it. Mine would have fooled a left-hander, but hit a right-handed batter. that's what my pitch would have done, you know.
It's true. You know, I guess I didn't end up on YouTube and that like 50 Cent or somebody. It wasn't embarrassing.
Correct.
It was close. But, you know, I've gotten more into sports, and the older I get, and obviously the harder it is to play, and the fewer places there are to, you know, let me play. But I just love it. It's become a bigger and bigger part of my life. I wish I had just given my all to being a professional athlete somehow. I got a friend who says that we can, if we could hack the onside kick somehow, we might still be able to, we could volunteer for a professional football team if we could just figure out how to do that one thing somehow. But other than that, I don't stand a chance in hell being able to actually play. But I play in a baseball team out in L.A., and yeah. That's been a lot of fun. We started that like 10 years ago, and I know you had John Hamm on your show.
Yes.
Hamm plays on our club. And
club, I love it.
Yeah.
He plays in your club. Okay, yeah.
He's pretty good. And we have a lot of fun. So it's kind of worth it. You get into your 40s, and it's I started this sort of 10 years ago. So
what do you play? Where do you play out there? What do you play?
I play third.
Hot
Hamm
corner
plays first. Yep.
Hot corner.
Hot corner.
So Hamm plays first. So if you're scoring at home, it's the 5-3 put out is Affleck to Hamm. Is that what you're saying?
Affleck to
on your
Hamm.
Club.
You know, it hasn't been called on the radio that way yet.
It's my job to say things that way. I'm sorry. I slip right into it, Casey. I can't help myself.
Yeah.
So that's it. 5-3. That's the put out. You're the hot corner, man. Anybody else that we know on your team? On your club?
Well, one time we played with Matt Moore, the quarterback of the – he was then playing in Miami.
Okay.
We go up and play at San Quentin. We'll take the team up to the prison in San Quentin, and we'll play ball up there. And, it's a great experience. They have their own baseball team, and so they love having guys from the outside come in and play them. And we were short a couple guys one year. Some guys just didn't get cleared. You got to, like, you know, make sure you don't have a record and stuff. And so we went up there, and a friend knew Matt Moore, and so he invited him up. And, the guys in San Quentin got a real kick out of that when they realized who he was. I don't know, who else? We have a guy who played with the Mets, is one of our best pitchers. You know, when we went up to San Quentin, man, it was the most amazing experience because this is the first year, and you go up and they just put you out in the yard. There's nobody with you. They just say, look, we don't, you know, sign a paper that says you understand we don't negotiate for hostages, and go on in there and play.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
Seriously. And so it's like 8 in the morning or something, 7:30 when they put everyone out there. So we go in and we play two doubleheaders. We play a doubleheader, play two games with a little sort of lunch break in between, and when the guys have to go back into their cells and be counted, and then they come back out. And the first game, we beat them. And we went back in there for the second game, and these guys, they were upset. You know, some of them knew who I was a little bit, but
right.
They just generally knew we were like these guys had come up from L.A., and they really wanted to win. And it was like one of those situations you imagine when you're a kid in the backyard and you sort of like paint the picture for some at bat. This was the last inning, and we were up by three. They were the home team, obviously, so we had our best pitcher on the mound.
Yeah.
There was two outs with bases loaded and a full count, and a guy hits a walk-off grand slam out of San Quentin to win the game, and they went crazy. I mean, it was like they were so, so happy. The celebration lasted 20 minutes, and then so that just felt great. That was the best feeling I've ever had losing a baseball game.
No kidding. Oh, my gosh. So I don't know. I'm like, is this – it's like stir crazy, like, or the baseball version of the longest yard in a way, that you're going up there and you're playing against these guys and a doubleheader. You beat them, they took the nightcap is basically what you're saying in this thing. Man, what a story.
And it feels great for them. You can tell how much it means to them to be able to go play ball. I mean, a lot of them were athletes. There was a guy there who was a shortstop. He had been scouted by the Indians and the Royals when he was 18 years old. He was an incredible athlete. He had gotten into a car with a friend who had committed murder that same night earlier, and he didn't know it. So he was arrested as an accomplice to murder. And when the police pulled the car over later, and when we played with him a few years ago, he had been in prison for 15 years.
Oh, my God.
And he missed his window to play professional ball. So then the next year he made parole and he was out.
Casey Affleck here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk about your movies here. I'll make that heel turn. Our Friend is really intense, sir. I mean, and it is based on a story in Esquire where you play the husband who's losing his wife to cancer. She's been diagnosed terminally, and Jason Segel plays a friend that comes in to try and help in a very difficult spot in a situation. Beautiful movie, sir. Why did you want to make it? Why'd you want to do it?
You know, I like the story. I like the people involved that are making the movie. It's just a movie about people showing up for one another when it's really hard. It sort of reaffirms the great and sometimes forgotten value of friendship. And I like that message. This guy, Jason Segel's character, it's a true story. These are all real people, and I don't really know them, but, you know, based on what people say about them and what was the research the writer did, I feel like I do. And Segel's character has got his life is really empty, and my life is in crisis, and he drops everything, and he shows up for me. And so it sort of it supported that old adage that, you know, if you need a friend, be a friend. And I thought, like, that's a pretty good message.
You shot it in Fairhope, Alabama, where the real story, that's where the real story took place too, right?
Yeah.
Huh. That is just really, I mean, man, you do some deep, intense movies. I mean, this is, is it a choice that you do this, Casey? I mean,
they won't let me do comedies.
You tried, and they just won't let you do it, huh? I mean, they just as much
like
as you
not
try.
Funny. You want to be in a comedy, you're going to have to be funny. I don't know. I like some of these. Yeah, I'm drawn to these to dramas, I guess. But they're not the movies I watch. You know, when I'm sitting at home, I'm putting on World War Z and Moneyball and
tapping out.
Yeah.
Uh huh. And then The World to Come, you produce this as well, takes place in the 19th century in the northeast of our country. And I'll give you the floor on why you wanted to produce this and what people should check out February 12th in theaters and then on digital on March 2nd.
You know, I did a movie called The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, and the guy who wrote that book became a friend of mine. It was based on a book, and Ron Hansen. And I asked him, you got anything other stories you want to tell? And he sent me two, and one was about this Cuban baseball player in the 60s. And I'd been to Cuba when I was a kid, and I loved baseball. I thought this was perfect. And then I read the second one, and it was about two women on a farm in the 19th century who fall in love. And I had never been a woman on a farm in the 19th century. I didn't know a lot about it, but it was a really moving story, and I just loved it. And I said, okay, let's do that one. And he and Jim Shepard, another writer, they wrote the script together, and it took about 6 years or something. And I don't know why I always pick movies, but it's usually just if I read it and I love it. You know, either I think it's funny or it's exciting or it's moving or something. And so that one, we went and got Catherine Waterston and Vanessa Kirby, two great actors, and they star in it. And it's a beautiful little movie.
You and Christopher Abbott as well. Again, it's called The World to Come, and everybody should check it out on February 12th, digitally on March 2nd. And Our Friend is available now in select theaters and on demand. Before I let you go, I just want to do a couple quick hitters on some of your other films that you were in, Casey. Is it true that all your lines in Good Will Hunting are ad-libbed? There were no lines for you in that. You ad-libbed them. Is that a true story?
They had lines for me. I just didn't say them. There were written lines, not
okay.
Many.
All right.
Believe me, all the best lines they could come up with, they gave to themselves.
Right. So how far off were your lines from the written page then, Casey?
I can't remember. I can't remember the written page on that one. I had done a couple movies, mm-hmm. and I had worked with the guy who was directing that, Gus Van Sant. I had already worked with him, and I was at school, and I really wasn't that interested in leaving school to go and make that movie, kind of sit around in the background, sit in the back seat of the car while those guys played hero. And but they kind of bullied me, and so I did it. And that's why I just tried to ruin every scene by making up my own dialogue.
No kidding. How about them apples is really what I should say right there. I'm sorry. I should go nail that one. And you give me your best Ocean story. Give me your best ocean story from that set. You got one? I know you're laughing because I don't know how many of you can actually tell. But give me a good one.
You know,
good ocean story, Casey.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
I've heard of that. Yes.
Yeah, we shot. Let's see, the best ocean story I'd say is radio friendly. is that, you know, I had a kid. My son was born on that movie. That's hard to beat. On the second movie in Amsterdam, we were shooting, and that's when my first son was born. That's not the kind of story you were hoping for.
That's
I think,
okay.
But it was 2004, and my next son was born in 2007. I don't know if those years mean anything to you, but
you're going Red Sox on me there,
you
aren't
go.
You? Okay.
Damn it, you're good, Rich. So, yeah, I didn't have another kid the next time, but
Well, I guess if you don't want any more children, it's good that Mookie Betts is no longer on the team.
Oh,
Casey.
Man. You know what I heard, man? I listened to that in your interview with Anthony Mackie. I just thought it was really funny, and I worked with Mackie, and you asked him for his best story from whatever he did with Eminem.
8 Mile, yeah. Uh-huh.
That was a great story, man.
It was great. Well, I had no idea. So I don't know if – I have no idea if, like, Clooney came up with lines to give you crap or anything. So I guess let me ask you this then. Did you guys, like, play poker or whatever on the set or anything go down?
I can't even really remember being on the set. All that I really remember was the times afterward. I mean, it was a lot of poker. There's a lot of hanging around. Everyone's in the same hotel. I mean, we shot the first one in Las Vegas.
Amazing.
So I lived in the Bellagio for, I don't know, 3 months. And I don't remember going outside that much. You go into one of those casinos, you could, you know, there could be an apocalypse happening. You wouldn't know.
Right.
Just everything got food. Anything you need is there. I liked – one of the things I remember is that the producer, Jerry Weintraub, sort of famous old movie producer, he really liked to take care of his big stars, which I was not one of them. So, you know, there's 11 guys. I was like number 11. And it made me mad because I sort of thought, like, why are these guys, they have all their food and their, you know, their laundry, anything they need handled is handled. They have people already who can do that. They have all the money in the world. They can pay for their own food. But every time I had to sign a check, you know, at this casino restaurant, I was paying that bill, man. So I just got everyone else's room number and I would just start signing.
Yes! Yes!
That went on for a very long time. The payback for that was that on the, I guess it was the second movie or some third movie or something, I showed up and this was Jerry Weintraub's idea of a joke. I barely even noticed, but it was, they had you'd go to the set of one of those movies and there'd be like a long line of 10 of these like luxury trailers where everyone, you know, between their scenes they get to go hang out in. It's like bigger than my house. And there's 10 of them, and then there's like a small used tent that has been set up for me to spend my time in. So those sorts of things went on all the time. That was a good group of guys. I don't know if you've read Don Cheadle on the show. He's a great guy.
Of course, absolutely. We've had him and, you know, Matt Damon and, and Soderbergh, you know, years ago when we were a podcast before we were this show, we had Steven once. We had him be the media critic for a Super Bowl, like to just look at the Super Bowl and talk about the play-by-play and the broadcast and what it looked like. And it was dynamite, as you might imagine. It was just, he is truly one of the greats ever and just a brilliant mind, and I can't say enough about him.
Yeah, very, very talented guy. You know, we would shoot, be done by lunch most of the time. That's what, and I've never met anyone, and then he would be editing in the afternoon. He could kind of do it all. And he played ball, I think, in he played baseball in college, I think. I can't remember where he went, but he was an athlete too.
I think he's a Carnegie Mellon guy or something like that. I think he's a Pittsburgh guy. I don't know off the top of my head. But at any rate, hey, Casey, I appreciate the time and the conversation, and let's do this again. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Great to talk to you.
Right back at you. Again, Our Friend, available now in select theaters and on demand. The World to Come, available in theaters February 12th and available on digital Tuesday, March 2nd. Casey Affleck. That was a lot right there, man.
Whew, that was fun.
the 1988 Red Sox. By the way, you knew what 2004 and 2007 meant as soon as it came out of his mouth.
Yeah. No kidding, 2013 for Casey, but that's
all right. But like I said, it's all right. If he doesn't anyone want any more children, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Mookie Betts is a Dodger. It's all good.
Stop.
Let's take a break. Phone calls, 844-204-RICH. We come back here in the Rich Eisen Show.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH. That was fun with Casey Affleck right there, huh?
It was really fun.
The 1988 Red Sox. I've got it up here.
You got it?
Yes.
Great team.
You ready?
Great team.
Let's see. Your catcher, Rich Gedman. Your first baseman, Todd Benzinger.
Wow.
Your second baseman, Marty Barrett,
right?
Your shortstop, Jody Reed. Your third baseman, Wade Boggs. Ooh. As they used to say in Fenway. Boggs. Mike Greenwell, Ellis Burks, and Dewey Evans in the latter part of his career across the outfield. Your designated hitter. You want to guess?
Is that the end of Jim Rice's career?
Jim Rice.
Oh, wait, Mike Greenwell contends that he should be American League MVP that year because Jose Canseco won in 1988, and Mike Greenwell was like, well, he admitted to using steroids. Like, he should give the award to me. I think he was runner-up that year, Mike Greenwell.
Here's your starting rotation.
Well, Roger Clemens, obviously.
Yep. Bruce Hurst. Oil Can Boyd.
Amazing.
Mike Smithson. Mike Boddicker had... was at 7-3. Jeff Sellers, bless him, was 1-7. He had 12 starts. And Lee Smith was your closer, 29 saves, before he went off the Kaskin flag.
It's funny seeing clips.
Casey was waiting for his car ride home.
It's funny seeing clips from back then, especially in Field of Dreams, too. There's no monster seats. There's the park looks so different.
Yeah, it's totally weird.
Well, it's kind of like watching an old game, an old football. But it's not even that old. You're watching a football game. You know, now you're used to seeing where the first down line is. You're used to seeing where the line of scrimmage is. You know exactly the down and distance because it's burned in. You know exactly how much is on the play clock because it's burned in next to the actual clock and the current score. You watch a football game sometimes on an NFL Network from back in the day, and you're like, I don't know. What's the down and distance?
Happening?
What's the score? I have no earthly idea.
What situation?
Right?
A Chiron thing.
Now you got, slime. Now you got slime if you want.
Play some tag.
SpongeBob.
Trying to think of one of the greatest innovations in. I like the Skycam.
Oh, gosh.
To me, that's cool. Ooh,
good poll question.
What's the greatest TV innovation?
Greatest NFL TV innovation.
We'll get that.
The
non-playing season's coming. There is nothing the biggest invention, period, for televised football.
First down.
End of story is the first down.
First down marker.
The yellow line is unofficial. I still think is on my my Twitter bio description.
It is.
Fox box.
That's been your bio on Twitter as long as I've known you.
Right. The yellow line is unofficial.
Yeah. But I do like the first down.
Henry in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's take your phone call. What's up, Henry?
Rich, how are you doing today?
How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you. First time, long time. Enjoyed the interview with Casey.
Thank you.
Actually, I showed my wife the trailer for our friend last night to try to get her, you know, primed to maybe put that on the queue to watch this weekend. She was sobbing by the end of the trailer where she threw the flag and said, this isn't happening. I'm not in an emotional condition right now to watch this movie.
I hear you.
So often listen to you guys, 40-year-old father of three, 11-year-old boy, 9-year-old girl, 6-year-old boy.
Yep.
And so the battle that you described in terms of trying to pick out the movie to watch hit me right in the field.
Right? You know it. You know where I'm. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, even right down to the whole, you know, image of winding my way through Blockbuster in high school. You've always got your bud who's staying the night with you, or you're staying the night with him. and you're trying to figure out. And then there was always the rush to the new releases. Yeah. And then there was that pile of return movies up front that you could flip through.
Yes.
Yeah, but so let me ask you, what's your process? Are you just saying, okay, guys, it's 6:30, it's Saturday evening, you know, it's pandemic, we're not going anywhere, it's movie time.
Yes.
I mean, do you hit it there, or do you have a warm up? I'm trying to compare notes here.
Yeah, I hear you, Henry. I gotta tell you, Henry, it's you gotta have a feel for the situation. You gotta read the room. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, sometimes any play caller will tell you that sometimes you push the right button, other times you think you got a touchdown, but you don't. I mean, I wish I had a catch-all for you, but you just got to read the room, and then eventually my wife will just come top rope and just say, this is what we're watching, so everybody sit down and let's make some popcorn, and if you don't want to watch the movie, you get no popcorn. Maybe try that one.
We've done different angles. We've tried laying the groundwork here. I mean, I'll start off by right off the top saying we're not watching anything with the name Trolls in the title.
Mm-hmm.
So. Ooh. It's just not going to happen. And actually, I heard an interview that you did a week or two ago, and I forget the actor's name. Please forgive me, but he had been in Dead Poets Society.
Josh Charles.
Yeah, that's right. And so there's, you know, Dead Poets is you know, allegedly modeled after a school here in Nashville, and wanted to, you know, kind of prime my son to watch the movie. So we start laying the groundwork for Saturday around Tuesday or Wednesday.
That's what you got to do. You got to set the stage. Here's one I've got about a minute to go, but try Hidden Figures. Try that one. We did that with our kids because one of our kids gets afraid of anything. Like whenever, you know, any movie gets out of control or, you know, some character is doing something they're not supposed to be doing and they get busted, but it all's fine in the end. We're like, everything's going to be fine. Like we've got one kid that can't have anything out of disorder. Hidden Figures is phenomenal, and it's also good for the parents. So try that one out.
Okay, will do. Appreciate the advice. Appreciate what you guys do. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thanks
right
so
back
much.
At you.
Be good, brother.
I love it.
So this is what I have coming my way, right?
Oh,
like negotiations.
But
3 days
one,
out.
You've got one child.
Right.
The multiple kids and the different genders. It's just a bad mix.
Man. Good thing Brockman's got going. He could just go, which America's game we want to watch of the Patriots. He's
thank,
good.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, he's got six of them.
Thank
he's
you.
He's good.
But Kyle Brandt, hour three.